welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everyone, to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, coming to you live yet again from the studios of AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. It is Saturday evening, August 8th, 2009. We're red hot and rolling, live and uncensored here in the Political Cesspool, broadcast around the country to our affiliate stations, AM and FM, via the Liberty News Radio Network. We're also reaching our satellite and internet audiences at thepoliticalcesspool.org and by other means. However you're tuned into the cesspool tonight, thank you for joining us in the studio with me, co-hosting my good friend and colleague, Bill Rowland. Bill, how are you this evening?
James, I'm very excited, and we both know why.
Well,
and, you know, I just can't wait to make the announcement that we're all waiting on, but I understand that we're still in the process here. And so, as always, we'll just maintain a stoic demeanor and carry on and carry forward.
As we always do here in the political cesspool, but Bill, you are quite right. Over the course of our five-year run on the mainstream airwaves, we have entertained and interviewed a number of celebrity guests, but for quite a few reasons. We are probably more excited tonight than we've ever been to welcome the guest that we'll be talking with during the first hour of this evening, and trying to make those international phone calls is always hard for us, but we're working through it. No, actually, it's no problem at all. We're just waiting to get a secure line and a connection with our featured guest for this evening. And when he comes on, I think everybody's going to be very excited to know not only who it is. Of course, it's no secret. We've been advertising it quite heavily over the last couple of days. But what this man has accomplished, I think, Bill, really sets him apart from quite possibly any guest we've ever had at any time on this radio program. And when people ask me to give them hope, what is there that we can take hope in? What is there here in America or even in Europe that people can look at and say, you know what, we're not just fighting a retreating battle on this front. This is a front where we're making progress. And more oftentimes than not, Bill, when they ask me for something that they can look at and put a little hope in, I say, look no further than the British National Party.
Absolutely. This is a party that has struggled from its very beginning for credibility, for to struggle against the overwhelming forces of political correctness in Britain, which hold the highest positions of power, to build a grassroots base, to go out, knock on doors, do the footwork, do the legwork, to convince people that the government in Britain is one which is entrapped in its own statutes, in its own codes, racial codes, ethnic codes, politically correct codes, diversity codes. And, of course, this type of government is smothering Britain under the filthy blanket of multiculturalism. And the British character is actually suffering as a consequence. Britain is losing Britain. And so, one man, one party, the British National Party and its members and its constituents are struggling literally in a tar pit to drag Britain out of the current desperate circumstances socially, politically, that the nation has fallen into. And so certainly we want to give the British National Party and its leaders the chance to speak out over the airwaves here and to at least get a fair hearing in the United States.
And this will be, as soon as Nick Griffin is on the line with us, the first American radio broadcast he has done since his ascension to the European Parliament. And that is certainly a seat, Bill, that is not to be looked over. That is a very prominent position over there, and that's a position that he has won while facing many of the same demonizations and conflicts that we face here in America as nationalists or as, for lack of a better term, right-of-center thinking people. And they have it all over there. They have it, in fact, in some ways, even harder than we have it here. And where the American right wing can't keep from bumping into one another when we try to accomplish something, over there they have not only organized and rallied, they have actually started producing very tangible and positive results by winning elective offices. And I'm not talking about aldermen. We get excited here when we have an alderman on, and rightly so. We're talking about a position of the greatest authority when you're talking about European Parliament. So how do they do it? We're going to find that out in just a minute.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to it. And I know our audience is also anxiously awaiting for the interview. But as you say, you know, there's a considerable gulf between Britain and the United States, both in time zones and distances and phone service. So we're doing our best to get Nick Griffin on the line so that he can tell us all about his victory in Europe. And particularly victory for the British National Party.
Well, he'll be with us momentarily. I talked with Chairman Griffin just a few hours ago. He's set to come on, and as a matter of fact, he is on as we speak right now. Bill, without further ado, why don't you give the official biography for those people tuning into the political cesspool this evening throughout the United States of America and indeed worldwide, as we are a global we do entertain a global audience now on this program. Why don't you let them know the biography of our very esteemed guest and friend who is on the line with us now, Bill Rowland.
Well, the political cesspool is both proud and honored to welcome the chairman of the British National Party and the recently elected member of the European Parliament from Britain, a man who has stood up for his country, a man who campaigned in Britain based upon the glorious history of that country during World War II, and who triumphed against overwhelming odds. And by overwhelming odds, we mean a massive smear campaign to discredit him and his party. He overcame these obstacles, he overcame these difficulties, and two members of the European Parliament were seated from the British National Party. Ladies and gentlemen, we are delighted to welcome with us member of the European Parliament, Nick Griffin. Nick, welcome to the United States.
Thank you very much. By the way, you're very, very faint on this line. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you. You might need to speak up a little bit. Of course, this is a trunk call, as you say, and it's going under miles of ocean or through miles of space.
Right.
So if you would just speak up some, but we'll get the interview and you will be heard.
Yeah, well, okay. We hear you loud and clear, Chairman Griffin, and thanks again on behalf of us to you for joining us this evening. Bill, I know you have a question right out of the gates. We have a very short segment left here before our first commercial break, and then we're going to spend obviously a lot more time getting into the details with Chairman Griffin. But, Bill, I know you have the first question for the night.
I do. Chairman Griffin, your election astounded many people in the United States because you did overcome so much harassment and so much negative press. Give us just a brief description of how you were able to overcome those difficulties and where the British Party goes from here.
I think really it's a matter of the fact that the British people are waking up. It's not just what we did. You know, we ran a good campaign. We got a very, very effective website, and we put out some really good publicity material. And at grassroots level, we had people knocking doors, campaigning in high streets and so on, you know, the length and breadth of the country. So we put a lot of work in, but most of all, the political elite in this country has really made a terrible mess of Britain, like they're doing through the rest of the Western world, and people here are pretty sick of it, and they want to do something about it.
Nick, what I'm so impressed about when it comes to the British National Party is not just your success, but the way that you attained that success. You really have a no-compromise party, but in running such a party, you do it without going over the top. You tell the truth in love. You let the facts speak for themselves. And you have been able to rally a great number of supporters to your party, so many, in fact, that you are now sitting in the European Parliament. As an American, it is very hard for me to understand how you were able to organize so effectively, because, as I said earlier in the program, over here, we can't hardly get out of our way long enough to make a phone call.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. It amazes me that in America, where you've still got so many advantages, you know, real free speech, a tradition of the anti-system radicalism from the right or a nationalist perspective, and yet it seems that things don't get organized. Perhaps you've got too much free speech. We were put under a lot of pressure here from the state, from the police. I've been dragged through court three times myself for telling the truth pretty bluntly, and sometimes it is better to, obviously you've always got to tell the truth, but sometimes it's better to do it a little bit more carefully so as not to frighten the horses.
Well, whatever y'all have done, you've certainly provided for the rest of us in the Western world a playbook that should be followed page by page. But you're quite right. Over here, we don't have, even though they're working quite hard to saddle us with these oppressive hate crimes laws, so-called. In Europe and in Britain especially, y'all have already got them. But maybe that's the case. Maybe we haven't suffered quite enough over here. Maybe you have to go through the kind of oppression that has been taking place in Great Britain before the people will rally and stand up for themselves. We're going to find out more about that, much more, in fact, when the political cesspool continues after these words from our commercial break. We are now joined by our good friend and yours, Chairman Nick Griffin, member of a European Parliament for the British National Party. We've got him for the rest of the hour, and we're going to get into a lot more right after this as the political cesspool continues on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Way, there's more political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
When the truth is found to be...
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards and Bill Rowland here with you on the Political Cesspool Radio program. We continue on with our live interview this evening with Chairman of the British National Party, Nick Griffin. Nick is with us live, though it is past midnight over in the United Kingdom, and we are going to pick up exactly where we left off. Mr. Griffin, we were talking with you about the fact that the British National Party has been able to make great accomplishment despite the fact that perhaps y'all are faced with greater obstacles than we are faced with here in America, at least at the present time. Tell us a little bit about democracy, and does free speech still exist in Britain today?
You've got free speech in Britain as long as you agree with the liberal elite. If you don't, there's not much free speech. Our media is controlled by the National Union of Journalists, and they have a clause in their rule book which says that they're not allowed to give decent treatment and just honest treatment to groups such as the British National Party. They can only talk about us in newspapers, write about us in a way that does us harm in the eyes of the public. So even if there's not active state repression and trying to send people to prison, the public get all their information through this this very murky-coloured set of spectacles that the Marxists in the journalistic profession put upon them.
Well, see, when you say something like that, it harkens back to that which we've been talking about for the last few moments. It would seem as though a party like the British National Party would have no chance at even competing in an election, much less seating a man such as yourself to the highest seat of power, European Parliament. How were you able to overcome it? I know it kind of re-asked the question from the first segment, but it seems as though the people of Britain certainly aren't allowing themselves, or at least their freedom of thought and association, to be stifled by the media elite.
Well, there's a lot of people really given up on politics, and perhaps our secret weapon really is that we're in a society where people are disgusted with with the main politicians, then to be attacked by all of them sets out to people the fact that, oh, perhaps the BNP are different. You know, when we're knocking on doors in an election trying to get people to vote for us, the most common reason that you find in Britain for someone saying, no, I'm not going to vote for the British National Party, is in fact they basically say, politicians, you're all the same, you're all useless, and they slam the door in your face. And it's the one who've understood that all the old political parties gang up against us, and that's what makes us different. They're the people most likely to vote for us.
Do you think, Nick, that there is a nationalistic undercurrent there to be tapped into in all of the European nations? Obviously, y'all were able to tap into the nationalistic uprising or rebellion, if you will, in Great Britain because you're speaking a very simple message, Britain first, that no other party is speaking. You stand up for the indigenous population of your country, whereas no other party in Great Britain does. Do you think that that's something that can be tapped into in the other countries of Europe, perhaps even in America?
Yeah, absolutely. Anywhere where you have an out-of-touch liberal elite seeking to transform and ruin traditional societies without any democratic mandate, which, and of course they haven't got that anywhere, then there's this potential for this public awakening and for people to stand up and be counted. And I think it is largely down, it's there in every single country, in the places where parties have basically got their act together and doing it pretty much right. Places like northern Belgium, in France, parts of Italy and so on. Places where we got it right, the public responds. in the places where people insist on modelling themselves on, you know, cranks and failed experiments from the past, then they go nowhere. It's really time for the nationalist leadership and for the activists to be really sensible. There's not much time left for our culture, for our civilization, and we've got to be responsible in how we try and put our message across.
And that's what I love so much about the British National Party, is the fact that y'all have been able to win, but you've been able to win responsibly. And by that, I mean you have to be careful about how you do it. Your image is always a factor. You hesitate to use words like revolution because it carries perhaps a violent overtone, and right now we're engaging our enemies in the court of public opinion, and y'all are able to engage them at the ballot box, successfully so. But do you think, and don't hesitate to take the credit for this, Nick, because as I've said before, when people ask me what's the best thing we have to put our hope in right now, I say the British National Party. Do you think that what you've accomplished now could perhaps be a lightning rod that strikes a nationalist uprising, a revolution in the other European countries?
I certainly hope so. I think it's possible. These things, there's a whole sort of cottage industry of leftist academics in the universities in Britain studying the ebbs and flows of nationalism across Europe. And they've certainly drawn attention to the fact that successful developments in one place are quite quickly picked up on by others. So that a victory somewhere becomes the potential for victory in other countries as well. We in our earlier days learned quite a bit from, say, the Front National. I went over and studied what they were doing at a time when they were way ahead of us. We learned from it and adapted it, and it carried us forward. And so I hope very much that European nationalists elsewhere in the world, including in the United States, will look at what we've done and learn from it, obviously change it because each country is different, and as nationalists we don't want to ape each other, but I do hope and I do believe that our example can inspire and help others.
Well, we've certainly taken notice of your accomplishments, Nick, and are actually proud of the fact that we've been able to scoop the mainstream American media and booking you to come on and inform our audience as to what the British National Party has done. But it goes without saying, you are British folks, indigenous British, white Britons, if you will, in Great Britain. And as all of the Western countries, Britain is the same in so much as you have a lot of obstacles that you're facing. There's a lot of problems that you're facing, problems that you're dealing with, and we're going to focus on how you're dealing with the certain problems that Great Britain has in just a moment. But before we move on from the positives, Bill, and all the feel-good stuff, Bill Rowland, I want to bring you into the conversation here. You really can't understate the strides that the BNP has made.
No, not at all. But, Nick, one question I think we ask ourselves in the United States as well is, how did these people get into power? How is it that foreigners, aliens, Muslims, people not of a British background, have so much power over free speech in Britain and over the populace itself? And I'm referring here briefly to the plight of Simon Shepherd and Stephen Whittle.
Well, the key problem in Britain, and I think in most other countries in the West, it's the problem isn't the foreigners, it's not the aliens. The problem is our own liberal upper-class elite. They're the people who've sold the pass. Taking Islam as an example, you can look at Britain and see that all up and down the country at Christmas time, the traditional Christmas decorations that town councils used to put up, they're no longer allowed, and the political elite say it's because it might offend Muslims. In fact, if you talk to ordinary Muslims, and I've got no grief for Islam whatsoever, I get a menace in the West, but if you talk to ordinary Muslims in the streets of Britain, they've got no issue at all with our Christmas decorations. And this is a liberal or Marxist Frankfurt School elite merely using these people as an excuse or a battering ram to destroy our society. But we don't need to look to foreigners, aliens, to look to see who's done the most damage. It's our own liberal elite.
That's
out of
right.
A mixture of guilt and greed.
That is exactly right, and that certainly here in America, I mean, it goes without saying that they would not have been able to accumulate the amount of power that they have without help from the inside, from the people who originally held that power, and that was, of course, the white liberals. Nick, we have less than 30 seconds to break. I want you to quickly explain the kind of people that elect a man like yourself to European Parliament. What is the average British National Party member like? What are they all about?
Well, the average member is someone who works for themselves. They've got a wife, a couple of children. They pay taxes, and they see the liberal elite transforming our country with their taxes without so much as a buy your leave.
Well, set tight, everybody. We'll be back with elected member of European Parliament, Nick Griffin, right after these words from our sponsors.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Continuing on now with our live interview with elected member of European Parliament, Nick Griffin. What an honor it is to have him on the line with us tonight. I do want to say this, though. Ladies and gentlemen, please check out their extraordinarily well-put-together website, bnp.org.uk, for the British National Party, bnp.org.uk. Anyone tuned in tonight from the UK, please join that party if you haven't done so already. Do yourself a favor by joining the party. And if you're listening from abroad, outside of the UK, here in America or elsewhere, do what you can to support the party by going to that website, bnp.org.uk. Bill Rowland, I know you wanted to pick it up with Mr. Griffin exactly where we left off before the break.
Just briefly. Nick, we in the United States also refer frequently to the liberal elite, the liberal media, the liberal academia. Is there anyone among that cadre of leftist Frankfurt School intellectuals or power brokers in Britain who has done more damage or greater damage to native Britons than, let's say, some others? Are there any specific individuals who you could point a finger to and say this person specifically has been of great harm to British nationals?
I would say probably Roy Jenkins, who was a very key figure in the Labour Party, particularly in the 1960s. He was Home Secretary when he ushered in what he called the permissive society, whereby anything went. He abolished the death penalty for convicted murderers. It did enormous amounts of damage to our society. They wrecked our education system, and they really not only opened the floodgates on a huge scale to mass immigration, they were also the people who passed the first of the race laws, which were aimed at, and very often did, stop the indigenous people from daring to speak out about it.
There was a lot of that going on in the 60s, wasn't it, Bill?
A lot of it, yes. Unfortunately, not enough people listened to Enoch Powell at that time, but that's another
indeed
show.
So. Yes, you'll hear all over Britain, if you utter to an ordinary people in pubs or something like that, if you just say, I'm going to give you a few words and I want you to complete the sentence, and if you say, Enoch Powell was, everybody says, right, even today.
Well, I guess that would stand to reason why the BNP is being so successful in this day and age. I mean, question answered in a very simple way. But, of course, there's a lot of problems for the BNP to handle. Nick, unfortunately, you've inherited a country that needs a lot of cleaning up, just like America does. And over here, we are faced with an overwhelming onslaught of illegal alien immigration from Mexico. It seems as though our media elite and government seems as though the best thing for the European Americans, the founding stock of this nation, would be to trade down and become the next third world. Over there in the UK, obviously, you don't have the people coming in from Mexico, but you certainly have a lot of people coming in from the Islamic countries. So much, in fact, and I don't know if this is accurate, maybe you can tell me, I heard a couple of years ago the most popular name for newborn boys in Great Britain was Mohammed. What can you tell us about the effects of the Islamification of the West, particularly the UK?
Well, it's obviously it's a creeping process, but it's happening faster and faster. The government's own statistics have been analysed by demographers and who said that on the present trend, and in fact, of course, it's getting worse all the time, we're going to be a minority in our own homeland by sometime between 2050 and the end of the century. But long before that, we faced the problem that already there's more people go to a mosque on a Friday than go to all the churches in Britain put together on a Sunday. You know, it's a very, very aggressive and forceful faith. We've got about 40,000 native Brits, mainly upper middle class university kids, convert to Islam every year. A lot of young blacks from, you know, Christian West Indian backgrounds, in terms of their parents or grandparents, in prison, a huge number of them in prison, and very large numbers of them convert to Islam. They're deliberately targeted by the more radical of the imams. So it's a problem which is growing at a really terrifying rate.
Well, and there are so many problems associated with that, too numerous to number here in the time we have left this evening. But it goes without saying, Nick, that I don't think any of us want to oppress the right of other cultures to celebrate their traditions and heritage in their own homelands. But by God, we ought to be allowed the same right in our own homeland, such as Great Britain, such as, you know, America, Germany. Our people ought to have the right to have those same privileges afforded to them. So with this being the problem that it is, what is the BNP stance on the Islamification of the UK, and what are you doing to reverse these trends?
Well, we think that Islam and our traditional Western Christian and democratic values are incompatible. So whereas with all the other immigration that our countries have suffered, had inflicted on them in the last 40 years, really and truly we say that partly we're responsible ourselves. We are the ones who allowed our politicians to get away with it. And to an extent, we have to make the best of a bad job. But that's with people who are prepared to change their ways to fit with us. But the Islamic population won't do that. They won't change their birth rate to match ours. They won't adapt their, you know, their religion and their core values to adapt to match ours. So we believe that we need a serious national, in fact international, debate about how to reverse the problem of the Islamification of Europe. And on the other side of that, it's also entirely fair for the Muslims of the world to criticize and be angered by the way in which the capitalist elites, the various different interest groups in the West, have sought and still seek to de-Islamify the Middle East. And our position, quite simply, in the end, is there has to be a peace deal to end the clash of civilizations, which has been created not by us but by our masters. And in fundamentals, the deal means that Islam must leave the West, and the West must leave the traditional lands of Islam.
Well, it's very interesting how you put all that, and I guess there's a great double standard in play here, and that is, if you or I went to one of these Islamic countries and demanded that our will be done in their nations, well, obviously, they wouldn't put up with that. Whereas they can come to our ancestral homelands and treat it as a flop house and demand that we change to cater to them. Now, I guess a lot of this would be rectified if we had strict border control and perhaps a great deportation plan enacted by the government. How does it work over there? Obviously, here we have porous borders, Nick. People can come over from Mexico basically any time of the day, and once they're here, they are awarded all sorts of welfare and affirmative action type set-asides. How does it work in the UK? What is your border control or lack of border control like, and is anyone besides the BNP talking about perhaps deporting these folks?
Well, Britain's got a population of about 60 million now, and roughly speaking, some 600,000 immigrants come into the country each year, and about 250,000 people leave each year, most of whom are indigenous Brits who can't stand it anymore, you know, and are going to Spain or Australia or the United States. So when you then look at the birth rate, the very high birth rate of most of the recent immigrant groups, our population of 60 million, it's changing from indigenous to third world at a rate of about 1 million a year. So it really is a huge, huge problem. Everybody, all the political parties now, because we're here, they're now all talking about immigration and getting tough with immigration and doing something about it. And one of the great effects we've had is that up until the British National Party became a credible force, the other politicians literally conspired to not even talk about the issue of immigration. So the public could be very concerned about it, but at a general election, the other parties would sign up to an agreement that they wouldn't make it an election issue. So people were angry but could do and say nothing effectively. Because we're here now, they're all terrified of us, the other political parties.
So well, you forced their hand on a very important issue.
Of course, they won't walk the walk.
It's a vitally important issue. I mean, this is an issue in which your cultural identity hangs in the balance. And I would imagine if what's going on over there is anything like is taking place here, that these folks who don't share the same heroes and traditions and values as the British nationals are coming in, they are, first of all, not assimilating, but more often than not, probably a threat to state security. Am I wrong, Nick?
There's a threat to state security. There's a threat to people's jobs and livelihoods. You know, the real reason, let's face it, for why mass immigration is so popular with the elite is that it makes them money. You know, it's about driving down ordinary workers' wages and making sure that they can't organize properly. So there's a lot of it there. So it threatens ordinary families at a financial level. Obviously, culturally, our culture is literally being destroyed. And then there's various really serious criminal problems. The worst in Britain, which is still not acknowledged by the liberal elite, is what is called grooming, which is, in simple terms, gangs of young Muslim men going out and seducing or snatching and gang raping young, mainly white girls, but also Sikh and Hindu girls, basically the girls of any other community other than their own. And it's a really, really serious, wicked, evil problem.
We'll be back with more with Nick Griffin right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards and Bill Rowland here with you live. Our guest is Nick Griffin, chairman of the British National Party and elected member of European Parliament. In the last segment, you heard Nick quite rightly state that our own people probably have more blame at their feet than our most ardent enemies of other ethnicities. And it's just amazing that these politicians and the plutocratic elite in the media, how they can be such traitors to their own country, to their own people. It's sickening it is to me to that they be so fearful of offending the false gods of political correctness, that they would sacrifice their own family to appease the folks who are pushing this cultural Marxism. But thankfully, we have people like Nick Griffin, leaders like Nick Griffin and his party, who are standing up and making a very, very big difference. Nick, I got to ask you a personal question. What's it like to be in the European Parliament? I mean, do you have to delouse and take a shower immediately after each session? Or how do you stand being around those folks?
Well, it's a strange thing to start with. It's a bit like being, you know, a new boy at secondary school, but you pretty soon get used to it. It's very interesting, actually. The British politicians who are there from the old parties are very childishly hostile. There was one who was actually scheduled to sit next to my colleague Andrew Bruns, RMEP from Yorkshire and Humberside, and she wouldn't sit next to him and went and sat in someone else's seat, actually in the parliamentary chamber, and had to be carried away by the people in charge. So they're very childish. Some of the politicians from some of the other parties in other countries, including, strangely, the Greens from Germany, are prepared to come up and talk and find the points on what we differ, and, of course, also points on which we agree. And it's a very, very strange thing, that this difference between, I suppose, the what is called the Anglo-Saxon liberal elite, and the others seem a little bit different. It's very strange.
Well, no matter how you are treated by your neighbors in there, what you have done is set a precedent. And you've got the camel's nose in the tent, as they say, and what you have done is prove that people with a nationalistic message can win. And I couldn't even imagine, Nick, the sort of affirmation it must have been, the endorsement of our heartfelt and shared ideologies when you ascended to that seat, when you won on an election night. I just couldn't imagine the exuberance you must have felt.
It was something absolutely fantastic. It really was. It's I've been at this. I'm 50 now. I've been at this game since I was 15, really it was quite something. I felt very humble on behalf of, you know, all the supporters. We were elected by a whisker in the Northwest, and every single place where we had a little group of people who'd gone out night after night in the wet, knocking on doors and putting out leaflets, and sometimes getting chased down the streets by ethnics or arrested by the police for being out campaigning for us, you know, to win for them was a wonderful thing.
Well, you didn't just win for them, Nick. You won for us, and I certainly count you as a hero and a friend, if you can be both. But let me ask you this. What's next? Obviously, you're not satisfied with just having elected two MEPs, and you're not going to rest on your past laurels. What's next for the BNP? What's your vision for the party over the next 5 years, say?
Well, the only thing that's left now, well, there's two things left. There's the devolved assemblies in Wales and in Scotland, and the Welsh Assembly election comes up in 2 years, and we're in with a serious chance of winning seats there. I suppose this is a bit like a state, bigger than a state legislature in the United States. So we want to get one or two of those under our belt. Then, of course, the big prize is seats in the House of Commons in Westminster, actually in our British Parliament, not because that's where the power is now, because 80% of our laws are now made in Brussels by the European Parliament. In fact, not even by the Parliament, but by the bureaucrats. So there's not actually much power left in the British House of Commons, but there's still an enormous amount of prestige there and perceived power and credibility. And that's where we want to get. We've got a general election coming up within 10 months, and for the first time ever, we're in with an outside chance of winning seats in a parliamentary general election. So that's our next target.
Well, I've seen the website, and again, I want to plug at bnp.org.uk for all of those interested in reading more about the British National Party. And I've seen the kind of rallies that you've had, the kind of people that show up, just a rabid fan base, for lack of a better word. Rabid's a base of good supporters would be a better way of describing it. And it's only growing. Bill, in terms of what's next, I know you had a follow-up question.
Yes, Nick, I was going to mention, you know, in the United States, we don't have one advantage you have in Britain, and that is a royal family. Do you see the royal family coming into play at any point in British politics as the threat to British nationality increases?
Well, I'm afraid to say that people for the last probably 30 years have been writing and petitioning the Queen, asking her to uphold her coronation oath to protect the British Constitution instead of allowing it to be swamped and destroyed by rule from the European Union, and she's done nothing. And Prince Charles has some great ideas on architecture, on decent and sustainable farming, on protecting our landscape and so on, smashing on those things, but on multiculturalism, he's absolutely hopeless. He's declared his intention not to be known as defender of the faith, which is near Protestant Anglicanism, going back to the time of Henry VIII. He wants to be known as defender of faiths, plural, with all of them. And I fear in due course we'll get what our Flemish colleagues in Flanders, the Vlaams Belang, have had, when their king has actually gone out just before an election and said to people, don't vote for the only people who can possibly keep this nation alive. And I think that's the reality. So I'm a monarchist. We're a monarchist party. We believe it's a good system. It's far better than the president of the kind that you've got. But the people at the head of this royal family, I'm afraid they're really no friends of the British people.
Well, do you think that the two princes have any redeeming qualities? Any better, any worse?
I think they may well have, particularly, of course, they're no lovers of the media after their experience with their mother. So perhaps there's something there. And both of them, with their attitudes in the armed forces, actually serving and so on, that indicates a strength of character, which perhaps at some stage in the future could turn things around.
Well, I think that the practical advice to take here, though, would be don't count on anyone else to do the work for you. Make your own break. Certainly that's what you're doing. You're controlling your own destiny, Nick, with the British National Party, not just yours, but the destiny of all of the British nationals who want to see Britain remain in the control of those who made it. And I think that's a very natural and healthy way to think. Let me ask you this. Contact information. We've given out the website. Give it out one more time and let us know how we can help. How can Americans help support the British National Party?
Well, it's the website's www.bnp.org.uk. Incidentally, there's only one political website in the English-speaking world which has been ahead of us in the world rankings, and that was Obama's during your presidential elections, when he was literally one place ahead of us out of all the millions of websites in the world. We've got a more popular website than every other political party in Britain put together, and the people who do it do a great job. It's very informative. I hope your listeners will come and have a look. As to how you can help, quite simply, in crude terms, people can give money, but no more than £200 sterling in a calendar year can be given by someone who's not registered to vote in Britain, which I think is a good thing, actually. If someone by chance listening out there wants to give more than that, they can't. We don't break the law. Although there is a nationalist trade union, Solidarity, which we work with very closely, and that can receive as much as anyone wants to give. So if you've got a generous millionaire out there, go and help Solidarity. But £200 per year is the maximum you can give. I would say overall, spread the word, encourage people to look at our website, and most of all, encourage people in the United States to look at what we're doing, to think about how we're doing it, and to look for ways to apply our successful lessons to the United States, because the United States and Russia are the two great nations of European heritage, near bigger than any of the others, and really we won't be secure in our heritage until one or other of those great European nations is back in the hands of its founding fathers.
Ladies and gentlemen, if nothing else, follow the example that Nick Griffin is setting. Follow the example that the BNP is setting. Believe in victory and go out and reclaim the destiny of your European nations and of America. Nick Griffin, thank you so much for joining us tonight, my friend. Godspeed to you, and you have all of our support.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Bill. Good night.
Thank you, Nick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Go to our website and donate as well. If you support this show, support us online at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Donate to the TPC and the BNP tonight, and we'll be back with our second hour right after this. Oh, 30 seconds. Bill, why did I hear 10 seconds? Anyway, listen, no, all seriousness, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, go to bnp.org.uk. We're going to talk more in the second hour about the significance of this interview tonight with Nick Griffin. We are not done by a long shot this evening. We got a lot to talk about during the second hour. We've still got another great, big, big guest coming up during the third hour. So anyway, that being said, no, truly, if you support this show, let us know it financially. We need your help to stay on the air. We are a listener-supported entity, as the BNP is a voter-supported party and a member-supported party. We don't get the big corporate sponsors, neither do
one
we
hour
down. Support us both, and we'll
two
be back right after
stay
this.
Stay tuned. Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting hallelujah,
hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room, all the way down to the amen.